And that was Jesse Winchester. That's what makes you strong. I'm very touched by that. As you know, Jesse Winchester was a war resister, American from Mississippi, Virginia. Very interesting detail about Jesse Winchester. He is descended from two very prominent American figures in history. One of them is Light Horse Harry Lee, and who was a significant man in the war, American War of Independence / Revolution. And he's also descended from Robert E. Lee, of whom he's not so proud. But Jesse addressed all these matters in American racism in a very nice, gentle, intelligent way. But I think we're joined now by David Jacobs. Are you there, David?
I am. How are you?
Well, thank you very much, David. We at the beginning, top of the show, we played my remarks at the meeting at the awards for the Victoire Ingabire Umahoza, which is given to people who talk about the problems of Rwandans, particularly who face imprisonment in Rwanda. But there is a matter that you were involved with. You have defended several people, and you've argued before the international criminal tribunals, the one you were involved both with Yugoslavia and Rwanda. And Ramsey Clark and others voiced a concern when these tribunals were established. Did the UN have a right to do it? And had they thought this through? And I want to come to the element that I know that is close to your heart, and that is after the trials were concluded, we have an unhappy situation where there are people who've been acquitted and they haven't been able to go home. So could you tell us about it?
Yeah, and firstly, congratulations on the award on the behalf of...
Yeah, I'm guilty of prompting people to say this all the time. I keep mentioning that I won the award.
Please forgive me.
It's
an impressive and very worthy award. Well, I don't think I can do anything better than quote to you from this. I found this in an old article out of... Al Jazeera, when I say old, is 2014, an article by a man called Benedict Moran called Rwanda Genocide Court's Stranded Men. And you can find that on the internet, and I recommend it. But there's a quotation from Bongani Majola, who was at the time, special representative of the UN Secretary General and registrar of the ICTR, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, at the time. And he said this: "We cannot run a criminal justice system that recognizes convictions only and no acquittals. It weakens arguments that people should be taken to the international criminal tribunals if they're going to become stateless after the whole process." So what's he speaking to? He's speaking to the fact that there are, right now, in Arusha, and I'm only talking about Arusha because I think the situation
appears
in other places, mm-hmm. Arusha, Tanzania, where there are 11 men, I think it's 8 of whom, I hope the numbers are correct, so either 7 or 8 of whom have been acquitted of all charges by the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. The balance have served their sentences, they've done their time, and they are stuck. They're stuck in Arusha, Tanzania. They are stateless. They are unable to meet with their families because of the great distances and expense involved, because their families are scattered to the four winds around the world. So what has happened, which is, I think, a terrific, at least a terrific step, is that an organization called the Association of a Defense Council, practicing before the international courts and tribunals, mm-hmm. has written a letter dated the 22nd of March 2018 to the Secretary General of the UN and copied to the UN Security Council and others, including the president of the successor to the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, called the MICT, the Mechanism for International Tribunals, complaining about the situation of individuals who have either been acquitted or released after serving their sentences. Mm-hmm. That it's affected they say, affected individuals from as far back as 2006. And despite their efforts, their lawyers' efforts.
In prison since 2006, acquitted.
They're not exactly in prison. What they are, status at the moment, as I understand it, held in what used to be a safe house for witnesses who are going to testify before the tribunal. But they're stuck there. They're stateless. They're homeless. They're penniless. And the tragedy of this whole thing is that it's obvious that this was a tribunal set up to convict. I mean,
it never occurred to them somebody might be acquitted.
It never occurred to them somebody. And frankly, it was even in the name of the tribunal, which I'm going to try and remember from memory, but it's the International Criminal Tribunal to paraphrase it, but to try those guilty of crimes, which is guilty of crimes during the in Rwanda, 1994.
An unfortunate location.
An unfortunate location, an unfortunate name. I mean, our courts are not set up to try the guilty. They're set up to try, our courts in Canada, I mean, they're set up to try people who are accused of doing bad things, alleged to have done bad things, and they're presumed innocent. So even in the statute, the name of the tribunal, it's difficult. But apart from all of that, this was a tribunal set up by the United Nations Security Council. And as you say, it's been argued before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and in public and otherwise by people like Ramsey Clark and others that this that the UN Security Council didn't have the authority to set up the tribunal. But part of the basis for setting up that tribunal to try these people is that it was going to be a fair, not to mention exemplary tribunal.
I recall Louise Arbour, former judge in Canada, saying that.
Exemplary.
Said, it's not going to be victor's justice. And she said, Nuremberg was. She said, this is going to be a proper court.
That's right. And so in our courts, just to be really simplistic about it, if you are tried with an offense and your trial takes place in Toronto or Ottawa or somewhere like that, and you are acquitted, you're still living in Canada. You can go home. You can go come and see your family. If you're released from prison, you get to go home. Yes. The problematic is that while the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda made much of getting cooperation from the international community, that seemed to mean at the outset something very narrow. That is, if we want the extradition of such and such a person from Canada, from France, from Belgium, from the Netherlands or whatever, you, French government, Canadian government and so on, will cooperate. Mm-hmm. And these governments did cooperate, and they extradited people who were living in the various countries they were living in, the United States, for example, sometimes with refugee status, sometimes just as simple citizenship status, as I understand it. In any event, they were living legally in all of these countries, and they were entitled to travel and so on. And they were snatched on the demand of the UN International Criminal Tribunal and flown way away from their families over to Arusha, Tanzania, to stand trial. And let me just sort of interrupt myself. A remark at this point in time is that a lot of the people who were sent to stand trial were senior and important people in government, in law, in the professions, in business, and so on in Rwanda, all Hutus. Mm-hmm. And had the Rwandan government itself asked the Belgium, France, et cetera, to extradite people to be tried in Rwanda, I somehow doubt that would have happened so easily. But
yes,
with the prestige of this wonderful new international criminal court, with this wonderful new international criminal regime, which seems to have sprouted seeds and gone to Sierra Leone and Lebanon and Cambodia and so on.
Yes, Liberia.
There's a big international criminal court as well. That has the prestige and importance to have these people extradited there. So that's what happened. But no one said, and you'll take them back. if they're acquitted
yes.
or released. So you have then these people there who cannot. The only place they could possibly return, I think, is Rwanda. And given the proclivity of the Rwandan government to imprison, kill,
yes.
Etc. Well, nobody mm-hmm. in their right mind would go back to Rwanda.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I'll just remind you, we're speaking to David Jacobs, criminal lawyer, Toronto, but who has practiced, of course, before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, has written about the matter, lectured on the subject. And, David, on that point about the weight they put again on countries, and they said, this man is in your country. And they went through an exercise. Many of those, and some of those who've been acquitted, attempted to resist being removed to the tribunal on the grounds that they, you know, there was no basis and et cetera. Now those countries are shrugging their shoulders, though the initial point of the accused person was, I'm not guilty. It's proven now I wasn't guilty. Why can't I be back with my family? And the answer is, no answer. It's like
no answer.
And you
no
say,
answer.
what sort of tribunal did you establish? I mean, you
right.
you know, blue helmets, white helmets. I don't know what you got there.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, the effort at the beginning was to create something special and something new, international criminal law. And by the way, for all of the criticism of Nuremberg, it didn't pretend to be a universal international criminal law tribunal. It was an allied tribunal that was going to apply the principles of law to the aggressors in World War II. At least that's my understanding anyway.
Very important point you always make, it, aggressors, those who initiated the war.
That's right.
Out and of which came all these ugly things.
And as we now know, by there's been a series of rethinking of this by authors like Ed Herman and Robin Philpott, and now with a book by Judy Reaver, which I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I'm going to read with interest, which tells us all fairly clearly that the events of 1994 and the killings which happened afterwards would not have happened but for the invasion of Rwanda by the Rwandan Patriotic Front. Mm-hmm. But put that to one side a second. So the countries where people want to be repatriated to include the countries they were extradited from, but also countries which they may not have been extradited from, but where their families reside. These are all countries that have, in one way or another, cooperated, quote-unquote, with the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda in various ways, including our country, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure people can clearly envisage this, but these are people who are arrested in something like 1996, and because of the fabulously slow pace of trials there, these trials sometimes didn't finish.
They've
in
been
the US,
incarcerated since 1996.
Incarcerated since 1996. And so somebody like, for example, Protase Zigiranyirazo, who was represented by
Peter Zadek.
Peter Zadek.
And John Philpott.
John Philpott, both of whom I think have been on your show. Protase Zigiranyirazo, who was supposed to be in all of the official stories about the genocide, one of the real serious bad guys, a member of the Akazu, the inner circle who plotted this thing, was acquitted of the plotting, was acquitted of everything. He was acquitted in 2009. That's 8 years ago. He remains stateless in Arusha, Tanzania. He remains living in a safe house with no real income, job. He's lost those years. He's lost those years with his family, with his children, and so on. He's not the worst off there. There are others. The international community, so-called, in countries like Canada and so on, put such weight on indictments before the International Criminal Tribunal. I mean, when I was thinking about talking on your show,
yeah.
I came across a decision from our federal court from 2007 involving a man called Maximin Segasayo, who was the Rwandan ambassador to Canada between 1990 and 1995. Of course, much later than that, simply because he was a Rwandan ambassador during the Habyarimana government period. Mm-hmm. the Rwandan government sought him to be extradited. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the bases in which our immigration authorities here sought to extradite him was that he had worked under two people. I mentioned two people, Dr. Casimir Bizimungu and Mr. Jerome Bichimumpaka. And they said in the judgment, well, those two people were indicted by the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, charges of conspiracy.
And?
There's no evidence that Segasayo disapproved of the actions of his superiors. Well, guess what? Both of those men were acquitted of all charges.
So
Bichimumpaka and Bizimungu.
Yeah.
Bichimumpaka is still in Arusha, Tanzania, and wants to come to Canada.
Yes, he has family here.
He has family here. Yes.
No, well, you know, you mentioned the international community. It seems to be the kind of community that says, not in my backyard. So nobody wants to take this responsibility to do the right thing, the decent thing, and to also respect law. I want to ask you, David, my understanding is a judge, former judge at the ICTR, who's taken an interest in these 11.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it came to my attention because he had circulated this letter through the social media site called LinkedIn. And
who is he?
His name is Wolfgang Schomburg. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But he was a judge I appeared in front of. It was sat on the appeals chamber. He was a very thoughtful man. And prefaced this when he circulated this. It seems to have been looked at by a large number of people, saying, as a former judge of that tribunal, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, he was deeply concerned about this unacceptable situation and said that he felt responsible for these human beings.
Well, isn't he? By the way, I've asked that question on this show. If you're a judge and you put on your robes and you've done all, you know, listen to the evidence, and you make a decision. And then those who are to carry out the decision don't carry it out, and you're responsible. You said that person is innocent, acquitted of charges. So why wouldn't somebody resign and say, what kind of a judge am I? I mean, I'm associating with a process where we're acquit a man of serious charges, and he is not allowed to restore himself to all of his previous rights? I'd love to see some people resign over this.
Yeah, I mean Justice Schomburg, of course, is no longer there. But I do think that the standard he's taken is courageous. He says he supports the Defense Council initiative and says that the United Nations is under imminent pressure to cure this evident injustice. Mm-hmm. He challenges. He says the judges and prosecutors involved in this unbearable tragedy must and will stand ready to assist in finding a solution now.
Good.
Let's hope that happens. But it's a tremendously lopsided system where this International Criminal Tribunal can freely call on the governments of France, Belgium, Canada, Cameroon, where people were staying and saying, we're going to yank these people out of their families. I mean, in one case, which I did, where worked together with yourself, Phil, the family was yanked out of Texas to come and stand trial in many, many thousands of miles away. And as Mr. Majola said, nobody seemed to think about acquittals. That wasn't the point of the game at the beginning.
What will we do if somebody's acquitted? Lastly, David, can you tell us the organization again, the lawyers who've taken this
sorry.
Up, and is there some place people can go to read about this?
I was trying to think of, I think if you simply Google the name of the organization, and I'm going to give it to you again, it's called the Association of Defense Counsel Practicing in front of, practicing before the international courts and tribunals. And that sounds awfully long, but you just, if you put in ADC-ICT, letter, actually, it'll pop up on Google just like that. And it's a letter written by, now this is, a, by the way, an association I'm a member of, and all defense counsel practice before the mechanism for international criminal tribunals required to have membership in this organization to in order to practice before these courts.
Okay.
And the letter is written by Ms. Colleen Rohan, who is the president of the ADCICT. Mm-hmm. It's a very powerful, well-written letter. It recites UN Security Council resolutions, and there appear to be at least three of them calling upon states to cooperate, to do the, going from 2012 to 2015. And, of course, the states put their head in the sand, you know, and...
this is, at the end of the day, there's another matter, and that has to do with the apartheid system. They had the Africans tried in Africa for social, quotes, social and cultural reasons, and then the Europeans were tried in Europe. And the United Nations participated in this little charade. They should not have done so. But at any rate, and now they find themselves, you know, they open the prison door and say you can go down the street and live in the safe house, but you can never go anywhere else.
Well, I mean, that's a terrible tragedy, and I think Phil, both you and I were involved for our joint late client, George Rutaganda, in trying to find a place for him. Now, he was somebody who was eventually imprisoned in Benin in Africa, and many, many, many thousands of miles away from his family, a country which he had absolutely no connection with, except it was African.
If you were asked, this is the problem of people who think that Africa is a country. And the people who think that live in Europe. Anyway, David, we have to go. We're very grateful for all that. We will return to the subject because there are 11 people who deserve to be returned to their loved ones, and I know you care about that, so we're going to follow it closely. David Jacobs, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.